Fork Tales, a podcast that feeds ideas to the food and beverage world. Fork Tales is brought to you by Vigor, a branding and advertising agency focused on the restaurant and hospitality industry, and by Quench, a food and beverage advertising agency that specializes in evolving iconic food and beverage brands. Learn more, visit vigorbranding.com and quenchagency.com. If you love what we're serving up, please give Fork Tales a 5-star review on your podcast service of choice. Think of it as a tip for good service.
Hi, and welcome to Fork Tales. Today, we're talking to a good buddy of mine, Hospitality Powerhouse, who helped reshape the dining scene in Tulsa and beyond. He's a founder and CEO of McNelly's Group, which includes 17 brands across 20 locations in 4 cities, which is absolutely amazing. He's a builder, a visionary, and could be the future mayor. We'll talk about that later, of Tulsa. Elliot, welcome to Fork Tales, and thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Good to be here.
So we're going to talk, we do Fork Tales because, you know, we have an agency called Vigor that does restaurants, and we have a agency that's called Quench that does food and beverage CPG. So it's all things food and beverage, and that's what we're going to talk about. But I was always blown away. I got to meet you many years ago. I was blown away by what you did for the city of Tulsa. And that to me is, I think it kind of sums up a lot of things that we're going to talk about, but I just think that's really super cool. So, again, I get a lot of people in here that are restaurant guys, that's what they do. And, you know, they're all about the restaurant business, which is great. It's super cool, but
yeah, they've probably made a lot more money than I have.
I was going to say your vision and attitude is quite different. So just start from the beginning, talk about your background, where you come from and how this whole restaurant thing became in your blood, I guess. In your blood. Sure.
Yeah. So, born and raised Tulsa, Oklahoma, grew up around a small business, family-owned business. And so I went off school. I was an English major, thought I was going to be an attorney, and then worked at a law firm and a legal aid clinic the summer before my senior year of college, just to kind of, build my resume to apply to law school. After spending a summer there, I was like, man, there's no fucking way I can do this in my life. I was an English major that barely read a book. I don't know. I was going to spend a career reading stuff. So I took an entrepreneurship class. And the first day of class, the guy said, hey, write down your favorite things in life. Your 5 favorite things. Mine are beer, food, travel. I said, okay, your project this semester, all you're doing is you're going to write a business plan, figuring out how you make money doing one of the 5 things on your list. And my junior year, I'd done an exchange in Dublin and loved [S2] Nice. [S1] Irish pubs, loved Irish culture, and loved Guinness. And so I started writing a business plan for McNelly's Pub, a fictional pub set in my hometown. And then I came home that fall break and was working on it, just trying to get a good grade. And then I came home again that Christmas. I was like, you know what? I think this might work. The restaurant and bar scene's really bad here. And at that point, I knew enough to know that craft beer was kind of happening, and no one had capitalized on that here. No one had tried to own that market. And so, my premise was, well, if I open an Irish pub and I can be the first to really own craft beer, that I think that craft beer will insulate us, right, and give us at least a foothold to build a business. So we moved back. I really got home probably fall of 2001. And started working on it. And one of my things was I wanted to be in an old building, right? Just the character of an old building was important to me and how a place felt. And so, that put me in downtown Tulsa, right? So I went through 4 different buildings. Ultimately, we found a building that was built in 1915. It was originally a fruit and grain warehouse. It backs up to the train tracks. So, all these products used to come off the tracks and then through the building and sold out the front. But it had been vacant for 40 years, 3 feet of water in the basement, mold everywhere. And so, it was maybe a year and a half construction project, something like that, get this thing back, put back together. So we opened, March of 2004, and, I had no idea what I was doing. Right. I'd gotten a job waiting tables for 9 months. That was my, I better figure out how a restaurant works experiment. But we opened it, and the beer thing kind of held, right. That was true. We instantly became kind of the destination in town for beer. Ultimately we got named one of the 100 best places in the world to drink a beer. Right? I mean, we really own that. And so, that gave us enough of a business to make it, really. I mean, but those first couple of years were rough. We were downtown on an island, right? Downtown Tulsa was really a ghost town at that point. There was a daytime population of 40,000 people. So we still have Fortune 500 companies down here that, you know, are busy during the day, but everybody left at night. And so our goal is to, you know, transform that neighborhood. And then, you know, fast forward, right, 21 years later, we have 10 restaurants within about 6 blocks of each other down here. We built 2 different apartment buildings, built a new office tower. We've done all kinds of stuff. Just, you know, more than anything, just trying to make our hometown a better place to live. And, of course, you know, as we got better at restaurants, that was our vehicle in the beginning. We've now expanded some of those brands, built stuff in other parts of the city. So I think we just opened our 27th unit 2 weeks ago. 2 months ago, sorry.
Wow. So fantastic. Yeah. Well, now, so McNally's, I'm not a real bright guy, but I'm assuming that you took your name and put it together and created
name.
Elliot Nelson and McNally's. Yeah. I got it.
So when your name's Elliot and you grew up in the 80s, everything's an ET joke, right? I mean, it's like everything's flown home all the time. And so the Irish side of my family's actually named Quigley. And I was like, man, and right when we were doing that, like Quigley Down Under had come out, that bad Tom Selleck Australian boy movie. And and I was like, man, if I name this Quigley, everything's going to be a Quigley Down Under joke. And I don't think I can handle that. But it's funny, we just opened a pub about a year and a half ago. It's great. I believe it's the best Irish pub not on the Eastern Seaboard in the United States. It's fantastic. It's called Bishop Quigley. And there's back in my Irish side of my family, there was a bishop somewhere in like the 17th century. So I finally felt okay naming it Quigley and getting away from the Tom Selleck movie. But
that is fantastic. And I love, like, in your whole story, I mean, you went to an area of the city that was obviously less than optimum, in a city that didn't have a whole lot, to your words, I think, didn't have a whole lot going on in the, I'll say, bar restaurant scene. Right. And then, of course, you know, and again, I get all these like master restaurant tours on the show, and you do like a bunch of different concepts all within blocks of each other, which is like the absolute wrong thing to do. Right.
That's right. Like I said, all those other people make a bunch of money. I just, I do cool shit.
It's
the worst way to do it if you want to make a profit. Yeah.
Well, and the one thing too that, and again, we'll get into the whole what you've done to the city, but you've always said that you wanted like McNally's to be like the Tulsa's downtown living room. Like you wanted that to be the place. Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, so my original business plan, you know, which I think, you know, a lot of people laughed at, right? But my premise was, you know, a really good pub in Ireland, one of the busiest times of the whole week is Sunday after Mass, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you'll see multiple generations in there, right? And people come in for, you know, throughout the week, you know, for celebrations, to mourn, to just, you know, continue a work day. And so to me, like, you know, when you do, you know, back then the business plan coaching was, what's your target demographic? And mine was like everybody, right? Like, mm-hmm. I want this to be a place where, if you like beer, you can come enjoy beer, but with your kid, because they can get some food, right? Or it's also, you know, if you're a 30 or 40 year old, it's a place where you can bring your 75 or 80 year old parent, because the music isn't loud and it's a pub and it's friendly. And so, so that was, to me, very important, that it was a place that was welcoming to people of kind of all generations. And so that, you know, what I remember early on, maybe like the first month we were open, I saw a family of about 15 people that was grandparents all the way down to little kids. And I was like, okay, I think maybe we've done it, right? And, you know, I always joked, you know, Starbucks has that thing that they talk about, the third place, right? Mm-hmm. It's home and work. And I always think a really good pub is the second place, right? Generally speaking, if your pub's really great, you like it better than home or work, right?
Right. So
third place is too far down the line. You got to be a second place.
That's awesome. And you know, on that, like I remember years back, I was in London and I was with my family, and it was actually the coolest thing ever, because for Father's Day, we happened to be there on Father's Day, which I assumed everyone just would forget. I'd be buying everyone breakfast anyway, and whatever, typical day. But they didn't. They got me a Father's Day gift, which was a historic pub crawl in London. And as much and excited as I was to have some different pints, you know, I started learning the history. And the thing that, it's probably obvious, but it was shocking to me, is, you know, you go up to these old pubs and you look at it, it's like, okay, that thing is super old. But next to it is a building that was only built like, whatever, 50 years ago, or maybe 75 years ago. And so it's, these old pubs were surrounded by new construction. Well, I guess during the war, the fires, all that stuff. I mean, the buildings were ruined, but people went out and saved the public houses.
Right. Right.
You know, they, oh, I, you know, I got to take care of more than my family. I got to take care of the community, the public house.
Right. Right.
And so that just blew my mind, which is actually really super cool. You know, for a guy who does appreciate a good bar or pub. So, I think that is awesome. And, I get the whole second location thing,
right, right,
for sure. So, but, so how did you found that how did you select the first, you know, location? Was it obvious? The building wasn't in the family or anything?
No,
like that,
no. So I'll tell you the premise at that point. Yeah. So you had 40,000 daytime employees in downtown Tulsa, and the closest place that they would have gone to have happy hour that wasn't like a dive bar. Like if you were a professional,
right,
the closest place you would have gone for happy hour was 3 miles away. And that to me was just like bizarre, right? I mean, I spent a lot of time in New York, Chicago, and these bigger, denser cities. You know, sure. When I left home for school, I always thought I was going to live in New York, right? Mm-hmm. It wasn't until I came up with this pub idea that I decided to move home. And but, you know, there you're in those bars after work and it's full of people in suits and ties, right? And it's like, I thought it was weird that we didn't have a place like that. And so, you know, at that point in time, there's what's called the Williams Tower, which is a half replica of the wall of the World Trade Center, which is interesting. Like originally there were supposed to be two towers in New York, half size in Tulsa and then quarter size in LA. Right. And, when we were building our twin towers, the oil crash in the early 80s happened. And, you know, so only one of the two got built.
Gotcha.
And, it's the tallest building between Chicago and Dallas at that point. Right. And so You look at it, it's full. But these people have nowhere to continue their day. And so for me, that location being downtown, one was about an old building, But the other was about being close in proximity to where all those people who were working could go and have a pint and continue their day with their, you know, their work friends without having to get in their car. Right. And so, you know, if you step out the front door of McNally's and you look right, 600 feet away is a, you know, 800 foot tall building, right? Or whatever. Like, you know, it's like, and it's crazy to me that there were no services really around.
Sure.
So that was a big part of the bet. You know, it was like, man, I think there are enough people here that will want to come for happy hour that we can make this work.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, the other thing I think we have in common is taking an old building, something that's, I won't say godforsaken. I haven't been to your pub, but I mean, I think there's a lot of work that had to go into it. We are in an area where I started my company in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, which is middle of Pennsylvania. And there was the original bank in town was the Market Street Trust Company, really a creative name on Market Street. And we were the first branch of the Market Street Trust Company. So it's like a 1912 bank building with a vault and like all kinds of marble. And it sat here and it does flood when the river gets too high, which is once a year. But I was able to, when I just started out with no money, was able to buy this building because no one wanted it. So I kind of funked it up and made it cool. And,
right.
We're sitting in an area that actually, this would make a phenomenal pub, by the way.
So yeah.
If you want to get adventurous in Pennsylvania, you know, I'll go in business way. Cause this is, I've got the building and I actually have parking, which no one actually has around here. But anyway, I digress. But our whole area back here really, and I mean this, when I talked to you years ago, I was really inspired. I thought, man, I should do this. I should try to do this in Harrisburg. Cause we have this whole corridor here that's just been left go. And it's sad. You see that in a lot of the cities, you know, other than the major metropolitan areas, you see a lot of that sort of decline, you know, and then COVID now obviously exacerbated it. Right. It's just it's a tough thing.
Yeah, but, COVID, you know, in terms of our business, you know, our business now, we're last year was slightly up over 2019, right? It took several years to recover.
Yep.
But the split on sales, in terms of, I mean, our lunches are still down 30% from COVID, right? Like, the downtown workforce has changed, right?
Yeah.
Especially, you know, Friday was always far and away our busiest lunch.
Yeah.
Now you can walk into noon on Friday and get a table because so many people work from home on Friday now. It's crazy. Yeah. So now Thursday's our busiest lunch.
Right.
But yeah, it's really changed a lot. But, you know, it's funny, these old buildings and these downtowns, I mean, you've seen it happen a lot of places, right? I'm sure Harrisburg's no different. I think it's probably a town fairly similar to here, but you know, it gets in you. It's a passion, right? I think I've now done 30 historic renovation projects. I love old buildings, right? It's fun. And it's funny too. Like once you kind of develop a ability to do it, you know, that gets easier, but because I think most people, they do one and it's so frustrating. They never want to do it again. But after you've done five or six, you're like, okay, I think I got to understand this now, right? You just got to kind of roll with it, right? Just don't have too stringent of a plan. But we just We just finished this building. I'll send you a link to it, but it's called 36 Degrees North, our an entrepreneurship incubator here. And mm-hmm. we just took a 1910 warehouse, 110,000 wow. square feet, $40 million project. It's incredible.
Wow.
But we did it all with the short cash credits. And
sure.
Yeah. It's but you know, that we continue, you know, we're almost running out of old buildings now to do, but we just started, we're starting another one right now that was a porn theater for the last 45 years. So we're finally wrestled that one away. We're going to redo that. But, you know,
now are you going to rent that, or are you going to turn that into another concept restaurant?
You know, I think we're largely done with, so I just finished a big mixed use project directly across the street from McNelly. So, I don't know if you can see right there off my shoulder is a watercolor. It was done in August of 2004 of the two blocks across from McNelly's. So when we opened the pub, there were just a two city block parking lot. Right across the street. And I was looking at it. I was like, man, this has got to be something better, right? And mm-hmm. and so one of my friends who's a valedictorian of our architecture class at Notre Dame, I like, he's from Tulsa as well. And I said, hey, man, come down here. I want to show you this, right? He was working at London at the time at the, you know, this crazy firm. So he was in town. I showed it to him. And he drew that for me and did it all out of watercolor and sent it to me. And I worked on it for 20 years. We just finished it. It's you know, it's 160,000 square feet office building, 184 apartments, and the, wow. this big public plaza, like hardscape, like European plaza. Anyway, we're going to build an Italian restaurant there.
Nice.
And that, I think, will be probably my, you know, I'd say, I don't want to say never, but that to me is kind of the final piece of our downtown mm-hmm. project for me, you know, in terms of the neighborhood and what we've built. So we'll build that restaurant. I think, you know, from then on, we're probably looking elsewhere to build restaurants. So the porn theater used to be a hotel above it.
I wonder
why. It was built like 1911. It was built 1911 as like a boarding house, right? Because this area used to be all railroad and brothels and boarding houses. And so mm-hmm. I think we're actually going to turn it into a little boarding house hotel.
Nice.
So, and then if we have anything there, we're talking about like a little dive bar downstairs called Smut. It's just kind of a tribute to the porn theater.
I love it.
Yeah, right.
Hey, listen, and I mean this. If you do Smut, I will do the branding and design for free.
Okay.
I would love to. Seriously, I would love to have fun. There's a guy in town doing a bar now called High Dive.
Yeah.
And he's
yeah.
trying to he wants to do like a high end dive bar, which I love stuff like that. So right,
yeah.
I want to help him too. Yeah. So
the idea at this point is we're gonna decoupage all the walls and like old Playboys.
You could call it Tulsa Entertainment Complex. You know, with your boarding house and people ask why is it called that? Well, you know, it was a brothel and hotel. Mm-hmm. So you could do something fun. You could actually charge people by the hour to sleep there. You know,
right?
It's like you spend the night. You know what I mean? That'd be kind of fun.
There's
a
business there.
Yeah. I think it's just hilarious. And I think people get it. So
yeah.
I got to ask you a question because I think I know the answers, but I don't know if I do. Where do you get your most energy, from the restaurant side or from the development side?
Man, you know, it kind of depends, right? You know, a lot of it's the development side, right? I mean, at some point, I'll probably consider myself a restaurant developer, you know, more than you know, it's my top ops guys and don't want me involved, right? So, mm-hmm. and I do, but I also get a lot of energy from the just hospitality side of it too. So, like, if I'm having a really rough time at work, which, you know, happens time to time, right? When you're an entrepreneur, all the time, mm-hmm. but, you know, I'll go into the stores and just do table touches and talk to people. I mean, mm-hmm. I still get a lot of energy from, you know, the fact that we have created these places that are the, you know, backdrops for people's lives, right? I mean, this is where their memories are created, right. Where they celebrate things. And that to me is still something that I really cherish and get a lot of energy from. But, you know, it's designing them and making sure we're hitting it right and hitting the concept right and all this, which I think dovetails more probably in with the development side of things than the ops side of things. But it's, you know, it's day to day, which one I get more energy from. The real mm-hmm. estate stuff can beat you up too.
Oh, no doubt. You know, it's you know, I'm sitting here again, maybe the entrepreneur me can't help to think about it. You know, we all know guys that have built, say, a restaurant brand and then they scale it to 25 and then 200 and go, right? Or we know big franchise guys that'll have like six or seven different types of
right.
franchise right. restaurants, right? The master franchisees. you have this sort of crazy cool niche where you could actually like go and be whatever consultant or the developer or the investor, whatever you'd want to be, but you could go into all these cities. Cause every there's a Tulsa in every state, there's multiple Tulsas right. in every state, right. you know? And I think, for all the reasons you did it to save the old buildings, to save the fabric of the city, I think is just a really, well, it's a great business model, but it's a really noble business model. I think there's something very cool about that.
Yeah. No, it's, you know, it's more to me, you know, so I did, about 10 years ago, went through a program. I really worked on, like some purpose work, right? Like what is, mm-hmm. what is my purpose? Like, what am yeah. I actually doing? Right. And through a year of a course and like working on it a lot, thinking about it a lot, I think I ultimately arrived at like, you know, I feel like my purpose is to make my hometown a better place to live. I just think that's mm-hmm. what I'm supposed to be doing with my life. And that clarity really helps, you know, I think give direction and meaning to some of these things that, that I do that, you know, aren't as profitable as building 200 of one single concept. Right? I
mean, sure.
But see, you know, mentally for me, it's figuring out, you know, like, okay, what am I, you know, how does this, whatever we're going to build, how does that tie into what I actually think what I should be spending my time on? And, mm-hmm. And yeah, so like these other towns, we get approached a lot and there's, and we look at it too. I mean, we always give it an honest look and we haven't quite found the right opportunity yet to go do what we do in another town. We've kind of done it in Oklahoma City. We have three things in one neighborhood. We're about to open two more there. And that was a rundown part of town when we started to, you know, but it's building restaurants where we think they really make an impact, right? I mean, like, you know, a pub in the right neighborhood can really, you know, really changes things. I mean, sure. And it's, it sounds, you know, maybe a little bit like I'm overstating the importance of it, which I probably am. But you know, I believe in that, right? I believe yeah. when a neighborhood really has a place to gather, that it means something, right? It improves people's lives. And that's, so, you know, I think we always kind of look at that too. And, you know, maybe it is, maybe it's Harrisburg next. Maybe it's that bank building.
And maybe, yeah.
maybe there's some people there just need a place to hang out.
I think they do. You know, and like and I, what you're saying, I mean, really, it does track because, again, we have the one agency, Vigor, that does restaurants, the other, Quench, that does food and beverage. And whether we're talking about a CPG manufacturer of pork or I'm talking about a restaurant concept, everyone says the same thing. It's about bringing people together. It's about experiences. It's about comfort, relaxation, you know, whether it's around the family dinner table or out to a restaurant. So it really is about that. So I don't think you're overestimating the value of a good pub. I mean, it can make the neighborhood.
Right.
You know, it really, I mean, and I, from firsthand experience, my wife is Greek, and I know this is a stereotype, but Greeks have restaurants, and my family has restaurants, and they had done the same things here in Harrisburg back in the beginning and back in other towns too. Put up a local a bar restaurant and, you know, higher end dining and, you know, two or three concepts in one town. And so it does, it changes things. And then there was for a while, there's this restaurant revolution here in Harrisburg. And that was probably in the 90s. And then that's since subsided. And then the COVID thing smacked us. And that's what I wanted to ask you, like, you know, you were brilliant to put a pub right by the biggest office building in town, but then when COVID happens, there's people are working from home. So has it come back in Tulsa at all? I mean, I know your Fridays aren't as big, but I mean, are you still struggling with that?
Yeah, I mean, the daytime population has never bounced, right? It's still, I mean, I think we're back up. Last I saw our peak days down here, about 20,000 now. It used to be almost 40,000. So yeah, I mean, it's not great. You know, it's interesting. There's the original pub, there was always this empty lot next door to us.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of 2019, I got a call. The guy who'd always owned it was being put into assisted living, and his kids wanted to sell it. So I bought it. And then we started designing it for a courtyard for the pub. And when COVID happened, we learned we were going to get shut down. I had decided I wanted these big, mature trees, right? So we ordered these trees. They were coming up from Texas. The trees were like, it was like 20 grand for the two trees. One of them was 30 years old. The other one was 18 years old. I mean, they're big live oak trees. And, it was like 55 grand to ship them. Right. It was like, and so I called a guy like 3 days before I knew the shutdown was coming. I was like, hey man, I can't take those trees anymore. Like, I don't know if I got a business anymore. He's like, we just dug them up. They're yours. So, you know, but so anyway, I had to borrow the money from my dad to pay for the trees because we went insolvent quick, right? It took about 6 weeks for us to be insolvent. And but anyway, so, you know, the trees come and they get planted. And then it turned out, you know, by that fall, it was like, oh, wow, this outdoor space is like the most valuable thing we could possibly have now, right?
Yeah.
So in many ways, the pub, like, yeah, it didn't bounce back from our normal course of business, but the fact that we then picked up this incredible outdoor space, which is one of, if not the best outdoor dining spaces in town because of these trees, has really been a kind of saving grace for us. You know what I mean? That outdoor space, and it's a lot of seats, but, you know, I think last year was probably up 20% from 2019, something like that. But a lot of it has to do with just how good our outdoor space is. So we got lucky on that one because the normal course of downtown, like we have a diner, right? It's heavy breakfast and lunch during the week and business meetings and stuff. And it still hasn't bounced back, right? And so there's some of them that are less fortunate than others. And so, you know, we still have a ton of concerts and ball games and all kinds of stuff downtown that the other restaurants feed off of that, you know, has kind of buoyed them a little bit. But the ones who are very dependent on just downtown worker people, that's still a challenge.
Sure. Well, I think in a previous thing you mentioned that downtown Tulsa had about 10 eateries when you started.
Yeah.
And now there's like 150. Yeah. I mean, you obviously had a huge role in that.
Yeah.
You know, why that growth? Was it people said, hey, look, this guy's got a pub and people are going there to eat and drink?
Yeah. I mean, so, you know, we used to track it. 2004, we opened, that we were like the 11th or 12th place you could get a drink or bite of food down here. And they were most of them, there were a couple other ones that were similar price points to us that opened around the same time, but everything else was like a daytime, like deli or, you know, a dive bar, like, you know, the old VFW bar or something. So, so when we opened 04, you know, from 04 to 2011, we opened 7 places. And, and when we opened our 7th place, I think it was up to maybe like 26 or 28 places downtown. I mean, we were about a quarter of it. But even then, we were a much larger portion of the footage because our places were all pretty big. But in that time, the city opened a new arena, $300 million project at that time, which today is probably a $1 billion project. And then they also they opened a new minor league baseball stadium a block from McNally's. And the mayor at the time said, hey, you were the person who created a lot of this momentum, so I'm going to put this stadium as close to you as I can get it. And that – so once those two big public investments happened, then everything else kind of took off, right? So and the market just kept growing. And our sales, you know, despite all those things being added, up until COVID, I mean, our sales increased every year. I mean, because not only was more restaurants and bars opening, but we were building apartments and retail and all this other stuff. And, you know, a couple of new museums got built down here. So, you know, there was a lot of activity that drove people downtown. You know, COVID kind of stopped it dead in its tracks. And I think we're just now getting to the point where we're kind of recreating it, trying to get the momentum back. But it's, you know, we're now, you know, 10 of 150 or whatever. But I, in terms of volume, I guess we're probably still a pretty significant piece of the volume. But
yeah, it's just amazing too. And, you know, it's like, and I hate to say it's reassuring, but to hear you say you're just bouncing back from COVID, you know, I'll say from my perspective, you know, we own advertising agencies and we're in Atlanta, Philadelphia, you know, New York and Harrisburg here. And, you know, it's like to this day now, it's like people don't want to come into the office and, you know, it's like, it's like, it's what we do. And I felt like I watched my company, because all I have is people. I mean, that's all I have. I mean, you know, my assets go out the door every day at 5 o'clock. Now like, half the time they don't come in the door. So it's like, you know, it's one of those things where I felt like the company is slipping through my fingers. And I do feel like it's sort of the energy's coming back and maybe the whole desire to be together is coming back, but it took a lot longer than I thought, you know? And it's tough. So
yeah, it's really tough.
I'm glad to hear it's moving for you guys.
Yeah, and I'll tell you that one of the long tails I think we're going to see, you know, you look at the drinking habits of young people, especially those who were, call it high school and college when the pandemic happened, they just don't go out at the same rate. And that, man, it's going to really change our industry. I think, you know, legalized marijuana, I think, is having a huge effect. But also, I think there's just been a bunch of changed consumer habits that are really, really strange. I mean, we're seeing, like, last year, you know, our food sales compared to 2019 were up, well, it was something really robust, 15 or 20%, something like that. Mm-hmm. But our alcohol sales were down like 10 or 15% from 2019. I mean, they still haven't bounced back. And so, you know, that change in consumer habits is really going to mess with the model in restaurants, especially as all the commodity prices spike and you're losing margin on your food.
Yep.
You know, that. So in some ways, yeah, we've rebounded on a gross volume perspective, but the product makes us so different within that volume now that the mm-hmm. the profitability is way, way down. And that's the thing that concerns me long-term. You know, is our profitability has effectively been cut in half from where it was pre-pandemic. And I'm not sure how we ever get that back, you know? Yeah. And, you know, is that going to lead to, you know, a lot of closures and other things? Like maybe, you know, you know, you see a lot of this growth now happening in places that have tons of private equity money and other things where they're chasing units and top line volume more than they're chasing profitability. But at some point, that's gotta watch out, right?
Yeah.
So I don't, you know, it's gonna be interesting to see how it goes. So I say we've caught up, but it's different, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny, you know, I just actually just did a podcast recently with a guy who's doing THC infused beverages, right? And I think he is on to something pretty spectacular because he's targeting more of a female drinker, you know, and like we know that, like from I'll say from the Quench side of things, like the RTBs and the seltzers, and that definitely skews more female. And then there's no hangover, the calories and all that, you know, and you still get a little bit of a whatever you want to call buzz or whatever from right. THC. And now they're really trying to dial it in so that it's sort of like similar to alcohol. Like if I drink five beers, if I have five Guinnesses in one night, it's got to be over a 3-hour period because, you know, drinking and driving and just maintaining control, that stuff. So they're starting to really figure that out. So that might be your next thing, maybe, because you're right. I think a lot of the younger generation is more willing to do that, you know, quote unquote California sober thing and all that. So
yeah, we've looked at it. I'm not sure, you know, obviously we're always tracking this stuff. I'm just not sure how it's going to translate to on-premise, right? Because so much of it's been tailored towards an off-premise consumption at this point. I'm not sure how that goes. I heard a new one last week. You said California sober. Maybe it was a couple weeks ago, but I'm using that Milwaukee sober. You know, I'm just drinking beer.
That's awesome. I will use that. I like that a lot.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Yeah, it's really good.
So I can't remember who said it. Like, nah, I'm Milwaukee sober. I don't
know. That's awesome. So you're working on something called the Santa Fe Square.
Yeah.
Okay. And that, is that what we're talking about? The thing behind you, the dream?
Yeah.
Can you want to talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah. So that, you know, I started trying to work on it I had that drawing down in 2004. Really started trying to work on it in 2007. And then, you know, all the market crash and everything in 2008 and 2009 kind of killed it when I started, like, I was really getting some traction. So then sat on it for a while. And then in 2014, I heard some people were coming in trying to buy that piece of land. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, at that point, I was like, man, I had one of my real estate kind of mentors say, hey, man, if somebody else does that, you're going to drive by it for the rest of your life and think, man, I should have done it. So I got back in the mix, put together a team of partners to do it. We bought the dirt in 2016. We're moving forward pretty good, we thought. And then COVID happened. And then 2021, we had somebody approach us about wanting to be a lead tenant in the office. And so that kind of kicked it off. And so we kicked off 2021. We built a 12-story office building with 700 space parking garage attached to it. That is completely full now. It's actually, we had at least right around the time we finished it. We finished it in February of 23 now, but it took a while to move everybody in. But that's full. And then we just, at the same, you know, shortly thereafter, we started building the apartments and retail next to it. So 184 apartments with 30,000 square feet of retail space. We're going to have a restaurant that opens up on this plaza with this kind of, we're going to do white tablecloth, alfresco dining, which I'm really excited about.
That's awesome.
This big public plaza. And, so, you know, it's all in, you know, we had a Hotel Indigo that went in at one small historic building we redid. All in, it was about $180 million project. And, you know, it took years of my life. It's interesting, you know, like, even that one, and you know, I'm not going to make that much money on it. but you know, it's kind of cool, right? I mean, we got it built, and it's very much now an anchor and kind of the centerpiece of all the stuff I've been working on for 20 years. I mean, we have, I think, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. We have like 7 restaurants that are effectively adjacent to that site, right? That ring it. And And so give, you know, creating that and creating a kind of sense of permanence in this neighborhood is just crazy. And, you know, I was talking to somebody about it this morning, actually. I hadn't seen it in a long time. A guy used to do like small construction stuff for us. He's like, man, he's like, it's nuts. He's like, people see it and they're like, how did he go from pub to building that in such a short time period? I'm like, short time period? I'm like, fuck, man. Like, you know, like, I had a kid that was born who was now in college in that time span. That was a short time span. But
and how many sleepless nights is that, in that short time period?
It was like, you know, my blood pressure went up, you know, 50% that time. But, so, yeah, it's, you know, it'll be interesting to see if we do another big project like that. I don't know that we will. But I certainly know how to do it now, which is kind of crazy. Yeah. You know, I'm going to, obviously you and I know each other from YPO, and I'm doing that YPO retail deal, or not real estate deal at Harvard in a couple of weeks. Nice. Which I'm really excited about, because in my head, I'm like, okay, I just built this, right? And not a lot of people build stuff like that and get it, you know, off the ground and finished. Mm-hmm. And I was like, but I didn't make any money. So I need to go like learn from some people who are really good at this. I'm like, how do I do it next time and actually make some profit from it?
I say, what are the chances of you going to that class and saying, you know what, though, that was my last project. I'm not doing anymore. There's no chance.
Yeah, there's no chance. I mean, hey, similar to the restaurants, right? Like a couple of years into running the pub, I'm like, man, I don't like running a restaurant, right? but then I was like, but I'm really good at like, creating a restaurant. So I was like, well, I know how to do it. I should keep doing it. I think the real estate will be similar. We're really good at doing historic renovations. We've done a ton of them now.
Yeah.
And now we know how to do this. So I'm like, well, okay, I guess I should, you know, take the hard lessons and apply them to something.
Yeah. I keep going back to like you, whether you invest your own money or not, you could put together these investment groups in these cities and just do this in other places. Cause it truly is a value. I mean, not just to the business owners, but it's so important to the culture of the city.
Yeah.
I mean, I travel a ton and I see this town, your town, I see it everywhere. And, you know, it would be so great for just people, you know, and it's, that kind of brings me back to something else that I read. So I'm jumping around here a little bit,
I love it.
Yeah. This is great. This is what it's all about. Just kind of like vibing off what everyone's saying. But you and I had another thing that was interestingly in common. Okay, you started off in your knowledge base of restaurants. You started waiting tables for like 6 months somewhere, and talk about that experience, because I had a similar situation where, you know, I was this creative knucklehead, and I ended up coming back to a town. I ended up working at this agency, and I was like, you know, I was doing cool work. So I'm like, yeah, the guy's kind of a jerk, and you know, doesn't treat people very well.
Right.
And I'm like, I know I've got a marketable skill, and I'm going to treat people nicely, and that's going to be my business model. And that was it.
Yeah.
So talk about your story there.
Actually, I'm not too dissimilar, right? So I get this job. You know, so I moved back from college. I was living in my parents' garage apartment, which was a short-lived experience. My mother did not like it when I had a female visitor, you know, late at night. But there's a restaurant, you know, maybe 7-8 blocks from my parents' house. Mm-hmm. So I went in there. First application I put in, I was like, I already had this business plan, and I was raising capital, meet with banks, but I had no idea how a restaurant worked. Right, so I was like, I got to go, like, you know, get eyes on this, right? So they hired me, but I learned like how not to treat people, right? And this is. Mm-hmm. You know, something my family was in the car business growing up. So we had a Ford dealership, and we had, I don't know, 90 to 100 employees, something like that. But my dad, like, I remember growing up, and, you know, and I worked there too as a teenager. And, but my dad knew every single person and knew, mm-hmm. not only knew their name, but knew what was going on with their lives, knew their kids' names, what was going on with their kid, you know, like, you know, how was Johnny's football game last night? You know, I mean, just, and people loved working for him, right? I mean, mm-hmm. So I kind of had that firsthand experience. And so I get this job in this restaurant, man, they treat people like shit, and they don't treat them like adults, mm-hmm. and they don't really mm-hmm. care about, you know, and you see that and you're like, man, I think you can do this better. Right. And, mm-hmm. I actually, the chef, the guy who was the kind of sous chef at that restaurant was my first kitchen guy. And, when I hired him, and I said, look, you know, and he didn't like the people that he worked for either. So that made it easier. But, you know, I hired him and said, just give me a really good hamburger. I don't care what the rest, like whatever the rest of the menu is, whatever. Just make sure the hamburger's good, right? He ended up being great. He just retired actually. That was probably a year and a half ago, Pete.
Wow.
But yeah, he actually stepped down after running the kitchen after a couple of years. He's like, man, I just want to do prep work and stuff. This is too much. But you know, all that stuff that I kind of saw firsthand, man, that became a core philosophy for what we do, right? How we treat people. I mean, you know, we still try to be a company that is employee first, right? And and my philosophy is if we treat our employees really well and they feel loved and cared for, they will in turn pass that on to our guests, right?
Sure.
And so, you know, we still, you know, try to put employee first, treat our people great, try to have best in class benefits, you know, especially within the city. I mean, healthcare and 401k and all this stuff. And we have, you know, we just started offering mental health services a couple of years ago. You know, we also have just this like email. It's anonymous. You can say a@mcnellys.com. You can send an email too if you're in trouble and need help. I mean, you know, we'll try to help you, right? And we just had somebody who was in a bad domestic situation be like, man, I need to get out of this, but I can't afford a deposit on an apartment. We're like, yeah, we'll help you, right? I mean, like, and we don't ask questions, but it's not a loan. We're not looking at anything back. It's just you realize in this industry that a lot of times you might be the most stable force in somebody's life. And it's a responsibility I take to heart and say, you know, we need to provide for these people because they come in and work really hard every day. And I think we have an obligation to then be there for them when they need something. And again, you know, it gets back to this, like, okay, you know, that's a drag on long-term profitability. And it's maybe like, but you know, simply like, why am I here? Right. Am I here on this earth to just like, see how much money I can make and buy a big boat, you know, don't mean anything to me, you know? So if I can improve some of these people's lives and make their, you know, life a little less stressful, then we try to do that. And it's just that reward to me far outweighs any kind of monetary reward.
Yeah. We have a very similar perspective. I mean, we do a thing here called People First.
Yeah.
We do all the benefit things you're talking about, mental health, the whole thing. And it, you know, it's kind of funny. And it was a realization for me. I mean, I like people. I love being around people. The COVID thing bothered me most, not because I'll say people weren't coming into the office and working. It was, I missed people. I missed all the people that I used to spend my days with. And, you know, one of the things I did recently, to get a grip on things is we did this thing called Three Things. And it wasn't my idea. It was something I stole from the guy that created NVIDIA. He has like 10,000 employees. He does five things. What are the five things that are on your mind? I want to know. And he asks for it every week now. So I do three things. Three things that are on your mind every week. And I know my folks that work with me probably hate it because, oh, shit, he wants a stupid three things. I just want three bullet points. But it's awesome. I get to learn about people's kids.
Right.
I get to learn about a baseball game that their son's pitching in. But then I learn about, like, well, I'm working on this project and I'm having trouble with this. Or it's been phenomenal. Or there's a client that's this. Or so I learn so much. And I love it. And the deal was like, look, I'm not going to promise I'm going to answer everyone, but I'll promise I'll read everyone. And so far after it's been like, I think 5 or 6 weeks now and probably like, you know, a good 600 emails, which I've answered everyone. And it takes a long time.
Yeah.
So I don't have to worry about what to do on a Saturday or Sunday morning anymore. So
the answer is basically
book. But to the point of the people thing, right? It's huge. And so talk about, like, because I've heard you talking about it, I know how important the people thing is for you as much as the restaurants, as much as the building, it's your employees. Can you share a success story of someone who rose like through the ranks? Like, I mean, I know you said continuing to build restaurants because there's so many people out there that you want to work with.
Yeah. I mean, we have a lot over the years, right? I mean, people that have started as dishwashers and become general managers. I mean, one of my favorite ones lately is a young woman who started with us as a hostess, a lunch hostess. And she has risen up, you know, became a multi-unit manager. We gave her stock. She is now a partner and owner. But about 6 months ago, we promoted her to vice president. So she's our first female vice president. Although I say that we only have three other vice presidents, right? So it's not like we had a bunch. But that to me is just like her story and how great she is incredible, right? And and I think she'll continue to probably get further stock grants and more ownership. And so you know, those kind of things, you know, make it more rewarding, right? And
yeah.
And so we have lots of those stories. Our management ranks are largely filled with people who've come up through the ranks with us. And so that's just really fun to see, you know. And I know we've now started a manager and training program where we let people opt into it themselves. And And, you know, those are the stories we tell people, like, hey, if you really like this industry and you enjoy it, like we do, like, there's tons of opportunity. Right. And, and we'd love for people to come along with us.
That's awesome. You know, and look, let's face it. A lot of times restaurants, whatever role in the restaurant is, a lot of times that's people's first job. It's their gateway. It's their first paycheck, their first time that they're not at home or whatever you want to call it, in school or at home. I'm in my job and it's in a restaurant. And to show them that there's a path from there is huge, right? Like, you know, that way there's no brain drain. You're like, hey, you know, you're a hard worker. You enjoy this. You want to build something here. That's very, very smart. Very smart.
Yeah.
So I know we got to go here, but I could talk to you for hours. But I want to ask you just a couple more things. You talked about running for the mayor of Tulsa one day. talk about that. What's the vision? Are you serious about that? And I'm sure you are. what's the inspiration?
Yeah, I mean, I'm serious about it. I mean, at some point you wonder. I think I've been of the mind lately that I can have a bigger impact on the city through the private sector and the things I've been doing. But at some point, I feel like that's going to run out, right? I mean, like. Mm-hmm. I can only build so much. I can only develop so much and feel like it's still, you know, really pushing the city forward. And I think over the past 20 years, I feel like we have, you know, we've created more private sector jobs in the city over the past 20 years than anybody else. And so that's a big deal to me. And I think we've made the city better, but at some point, you know, I feel like I've got to enter the public realm maybe to keep pushing that forward. And so, you know, we just had a mayoral election last fall. The guy that got elected is great. He's younger than I am. And, you know, I think he'll do it for probably two terms. And so that buys me 8 years to think about it. And also allows me to hopefully get my kids through college. And that, I've looked at it in the past and I just kind of, the mayor in Oklahoma City is one of my best friends. We've known each other forever. We're groomsmen at each other's weddings. I've talked to him about it. And, he's told me, he's like, man, you're too thin skinned. You'll hate it. Right. So because of some of the stuff he's dealt with and other people I know, like, I didn't want to do it while my kids are still at home. I just didn't want them to have to deal with it at school. And so I'd always kind of in my head said, well, I need to get them out of the house, right? And so my youngest will be gone in 4 years. So we'll see what it looks like in 4 years. My guess is Monroe, the guy now, will run again and win. And so that buys me another 4 years from then. And by then, who knows? Maybe I'll be in Harrisburg or I'll be retired somewhere, right?
Yeah. You talk yourself out of it by then.
Yeah, that's right. That's exactly right.
That's funny. But I mean, just phenomenal. And, you know, you obviously have just vision. You do look long term, which I think in this day and age, I think everyone's looking like, you know, right in front of their nose for the next 2 minutes. And you really have a good long term vision for everything, you know, and that's a rare quality, actually, I think, anymore. So, all right, I got one. I have 100 more questions for you, but I'm only, you know, one more question because I know you got to roll.
We'll talk again. I'll just come back on you. We'll change it up.
Yeah. This is fantastic. So, the last question, and this is probably going to be the hardest one because you own almost every restaurant in Tulsa, but if you had one final meal, what would you eat and why? It can't be in one of your restaurants.
Oh, not one of my restaurants.
No. That's too easy, dude. Come on. What would your last meal be? It can't be one of your restaurants.
Man, if it's not one of my restaurants, hold on. Because, you know, I designed one of my restaurants to, like, be my favorite meal, right? So,
tell me that real first.
So we built this little speakeasy steakhouse. And, like, my favorite meal growing up, like, when I, you know, it was my birthday, I wanted steak and spaghetti. Those are my two favorite things. So I just ate them together. So, like, we do this incredible porterhouse, which is based off of Peter Luger's porterhouse.
Oh, yeah.
And then we make this incredible spaghetti that goes with it.
Wow, it's fantastic. So that's,
you know, I always say that one's up there. Let me think about, hold on though. This is, I'm sure there's an answer in there somewhere.
Elliot, maybe it's something your wife makes. Just
Yeah, she'd call bullshit on that. She'd know. I think the things in my life that I really like, you know, really crave, right? I mean, they're like, they're all based around kind of memories, right? So, you know, whether that be, you know, pizza in New York, like it, you know, or even like Balthazar, right? I mean, it's not about the food to me as much as it's about the setting vibe. Sometimes. Yeah. Like, you know, my wife and I went on our first date at Gibson's in Chicago. Mm-hmm. I go back there all the time.
Sure.
I love it, right? I love being in that room. I love all the memories I've had there with her and my kids. And like, so, you know, that would probably be it for me if I was just if you told me I was going out and I had one last meal, I'd probably go there because some of the, my best memories of my life are in that room, right?
Awesome.
So I, you know, is it the world's best food? Like, that's pretty damn good, right? But you know, I'm sure I could eat some Michelin star food somewhere that's better, but to me, that's you know, and that's just how I think about our restaurants too, right? Like, we're not like going after awards, right? We're going after being the place that are people's favorites, where they make their memories. And that's kind of, you know, for me too, I think how I kind of look at it.
Well, I mean, you should be very proud, because I'm sure you've made many, many, many memories for people in Tulsa.
I think so. We've ruined a few nights too, but hopefully less of them.
That goes with the turf.
Yeah, right.
Hey, man, I just want to tell you, I just really enjoyed this, and I really appreciate your time, and you were awesome, and thank you so much.
Yeah, it was great. Thanks. I really had fun.
Good deal. Thanks.